Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
In some mythology textbooks, domestication, which is sometimes referred to in those texts as slave keeping, falls under the classification of parasitism. Does that shock you? Domestication as slave keeping or as parasitism? If you're a rabid animal rights proponent, you might think that slave keeping pretty much sums it up. If you're a biologist, you can see the parasitology side of it and realize that such are not villain-victim relationships, that eventually the two components of such relationships are so dependent they can't survive without each other, or the life they lead without each other has less quality than the life they lead together. Because of this background, I was naturally intrigued when someone sent me the link to a clip of a group of baboons and a garbage dump who kidnapped a feral puppy. The first thing that surprised me about this was that it didn't surprise me. I had just never thought about it before. But once I thought about it, it made perfectly good sense. Now, some people might say that the baboons started kidnapping puppies because they saw people walking domestic dogs. And so they wanted to, if you'll pardon the pun, ape their behavior. And maybe this is true. Maybe that's why they did it. Or maybe they're like some of South American indigenous peoples who keep guinea pigs in their homes. Not so much for companionship, but for a ready food supply if the need arises. So you kidnap a couple puppies and you kind of raise them the same way we raise lambs or calves for meat. But the baboons don't do that. They don't eat them. They don't seem to make them work, although the feral dogs do work when they grow up. They actually function the same way it's supposed that those first dogs function for those first humanoids, as an early warning system. So in a way, it all makes sense, doesn't it? But in another way, for me at least, it raises some fascinating, if troubling, questions. This whole concept of domestication. So many people talk of domestication as if this were something that we invented and that we used to, quote, subjugate, unquote, members of those species we considered lesser. But we know that this isn't a strictly human practice. We've known for years and years that insect species, particularly the social insects, ants, are masters at domestication. They farm with aphids the same way we farm with dairy cows. They protect them. They move them to and from the fields, so to speak. Bring them in at night so they don't get chilled. They milk them. So that's not particularly unique. Did the ants learn this from watching humans? Oh, how I sincerely doubt it. Seems more likely that the humans might have learned it from watching the ants. But if we look at baboons kidnapping puppies. Sure, they needed a dump of human garbage to do it, but could some other source of food that drew these different species together have triggered it? Like maybe a large dead animal and a time that forced animals to become scavengers in order to survive? Hopefully those who are studying these baboons will be able to answer some of these questions. And also, for me, the most intriguing question of them all is what we consider the human-canine bond really older than we are as a species? Wouldn't that be something?
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.